KUOW podcasts are made possible by listener support. Become a new or renewing member today at KUOW.org.
From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Rachel Solomon. This is Speakers Forum. Finland's public education system consistently ranks among the top in the world in terms of achievement and efficiency. University of Helsinki professor Pasi Sahlberg has a few lessons for us on the other side of the globe. He talks about what the United States can learn from Finland, where education policies focus more on professional development rather than standardized tests. Sahlberg spoke at the University of Washington's Kane Hall on November 14, 2012.
Thank you very much for coming. I've never seen so many people in a small room like this. So you must be interested in this little issue. It's really wonderful to be here. It's a kind of an honor to be in an American university where you can study Finnish language. There are only 5 million people, around 5 million people on this planet who understand this language called Finnish. And I'm very proud to announce you also that if there's anybody who would like to start to learn Finnish after this lecture, you can just contact Andy, and there's a great program in this university where you can do that. And if you're really excited about Finland and Finnish language, you can afterwards move to Finland. Are there any Finnish people here? Okay, good. Is there anybody here who would like to be a Finn? Remember, we love paying taxes too. Yeah. Normally in the education meetings like this, there are two types of people that I've noticed. One is the Finns and wannabe Finns. Yeah, so the rest is probably this one. All right. Listen, it's a really honor to be with you this evening, and there are two things that I am not trying to do with you. The first one is that I'm not trying to convince you that Finland has the best education system in the world. You know, when you read the media and if you listen to certain speakers, they make this mistake and say that Finland has the best education system in the world. But I didn't come here this evening to tell you that, because I simply don't think that this is the case. It's very difficult to actually say which country has the best education system. And in Finland, we actually couldn't care less. Because it's for us, it's not important whether we are number one or three or 10. As long as we have the school system that is now probably holding the world record of any school system in the world, where about 85% of our taxpayers who love paying their taxes trust our public school system. Yeah. In many countries where I travel and I speak to people, they say that it's exactly the opposite, that they are about 15 to 20% of those who pay their taxes and say that they are happy with the public school system, and there are so many people who would like to change and do something about it, but not in Finland. I think if we have been able to achieve something like this, it's deserves a story to be told, right? The other one, the second thing I'm not going to do with you is to try to convince you that if you're here in your beautiful state of Washington, or if you're great in your great country of the United States of America, if you just do what we have done in Finland during the last 30 or 40 years, everything will be fine. You know, it doesn't work like this. Unfortunately, there are many people who think like this. You know, we are having a lot of people visiting Finland nowadays because of education, and that's why the ministry where I work is actually called Ministry of Education and Culture. And we have considered changing the name of the Ministry of Education and Culture into the Ministry of Education and Tourism. But there are many people who come to Finland, and when they leave, they have a list of things that they say that they're going to do to embed or introduce the Finnish model in their own countries. And believe me, it doesn't work like this. So the thing I would like to do with you this evening here is to use Finland as a source for inspiration to think about education here in your own country or in your own state. Yeah. So don't listen to me as somebody who is trying to tell you that you have to do these things. It doesn't work like this. But when you see things that are interesting to you, think about the things in your own school system and ask questions, okay? And let's have a conversation afterwards. And when I'm gone, continue talking, because this is an important thing to do. So these are the two things that I'm going to do. In the first half of my presentation, I'm going to tell you just a little bit about Finland, because I guess There are some people here who have not visited Finland yet. Yeah, okay. And in the second half of my presentation, I'm going to tell you a little bit about things that Finland has been doing in education, in improving and developing the system that we have right now. And in the third half of my presentation, I'm going to give you some recommendations, ideas coming from this case of Finland that you may want to consider. Okay? Do you all understand my English? I can turn into Finnish very easily if you want. Okay. You know, the first thing I want to do is to actually dedicate this evening and this presentation to my grandfather. He's my father's father. And this photograph is taken in New York City in the spring of 1914. And like many young men and women at that time, he decided to leave Finland. In 1914, we were part of the Russian Empire. And the times were not very good. You know, many, particularly young men, left Finland because they were afraid that the Tsar, the ruler of Russian Empire, will take them and send them to the wars that were going all over the place. Okay, so he came to New York City in 1914. He went to study. The reason why he also came to the United States was education. So he went to study in the Brooklyn Technical College, became an engineer, went to war, and got his citizenship like this. He went to France with 250 men in 1916 or 17 and came back with 11 fellows. All the others were dead. Yeah. So Finland became independent in 1917. All right. On that time, we decided that Russia may go and we stay there independent. You know, Finland used to be a part of Russia, but now we say that Russia was part of Finland. And his father became old and ill, and in early 1920s, he decided to pay a visit to Finland during his summer holiday. So he left Paterson, New Jersey, where he was working and living, to see his father and family in Finland. And look at the young, new, independent country. And then it happened. He met a Finnish woman. And you know, Finnish women are beautiful and gentle and kind and caring. And what can a man do but fall in love, right? So he fell in love, they got married, then my father came, and the rest is history. Yeah? And you know, if things had gone a little bit different way, I could be one of you there listening to this presentation of Finnish education system. So this is to my father. Now, I would like to ask you to just to think a little bit about what do you see when you read this word Finland? And just if you want to do the exercise, you can also close your eyes if you see better when your eyes are closed. Some people do that. And just think about what is the first idea that comes to your mind?
Snow.
Cold. Anything else?
Reindeer.
Reindeers, mosquitoes. I've never heard this before. Anything else that comes to your mind? Tell me.
Lakes.
Sauna.
Nokia.
Nokia used to come to my mind 5 years ago, but not anymore. Oh, yes. All right. Now, listen. I'm asking this question with a kind of a seriousness in mind, because when I travel around the world, I'm trying to understand what people really think when I'm standing before them and telling about Finnish education before I say anything else. And these images are unbelievably similar from one place to another. Even in Sweden, you know, people have these same images that Finland looks like this. Yeah? And there are many people who think that Finland looks always like this. Yeah? 12 months a year, 24 hours a day, it's always like this. And then these same people, they come to me and say that, now I understand why Finnish kids are so good in school, because it's always like this. There's nothing else to do. You go to school in the morning, it's always dark, you study whole day, you come home, and you do your homework. Tomorrow you do the same 12 months a year. Yeah? So how can you have an education system that is on the headlines of all world's media, and people claim Finland to have the best education system in the world if the country looks always like this? Yeah? How can you do this, okay? The second idea that many people have is something like this, yeah? So there are many things you can see here that link are somehow associated to Finland. I don't want to talk about the rest of them, but let me take one thing that is a kind of a thing that many people who have been in Finland, or if you have a Finnish friend, you have probably recognized that the Finnish people don't talk too much. Yeah. So if you go to a cocktail party and you see somebody standing there in a corner with two glasses of champagne, alone, saying nothing, that's probably a Finn. Because we are kind of a people who don't, we don't like to do the small talk. You know, I spent 5 years in Washington, D.C. a few years ago living there, but I'm all right now. And one of the most difficult things for me was to learn this small talk. You know, you're with people and you have to say something even though you don't have anything to say. Yeah, and in 2 or 3 years, I became very good in that. So I can have a small talk with anybody without thinking or having anything important to say. But there are several stories about Finns who are not very talkative, who only say something when they think that there's something very important things to say. And this is a story about two Finnish men, and they were really good friends in their childhood. They went to school together and university, did all these crazy things together in their childhood. And just by accident, they met in Helsinki many, many years later. And they were so delighted about this reunion that they decided to go to the restaurant that was there nearby and celebrate this reunion with a couple of drinks. So they sat down, they ordered two glasses of vodka. They had the vodkas, but didn't say anything. They ordered two more vodkas, had the vodkas, and there was still the silence. They had the third drinks, and then the other guy started to feel a little bit warm up, you know. So he took his glass and said, kippis. And kippis in Finnish means, it's like cheers. Okay, so now when you go home, you can say that you learned one word Finnish, which is kippis, all right? So the other guy took his glass and said, kippis. And his friend looked at him and said that, did we come here to drink or to talk? So we only talk, you know, if there's something very important to say. And now there are many people who say that, how on earth these people who are never saying anything, and they're standing in a corner alone and, you know, enjoying these types of things, how they can have a school system that is so widely celebrated around the world. I just can't understand this. And then there are several things that people think when they think about Finland, that, you know, we are doing some funny, crazy things like sitting naked with other people in a sauna, a hot room, and beating ourselves with the brushes like these guys are doing. Or we are eating raw fish every morning for breakfast and many other things that people don't understand. So there are those who think that Finns are a little bit strange. And none of these things and these pictures and more that you may have don't really fit together with this idea of having a country where everybody's learning so well, right? Am I right? Yeah, it's difficult to understand these things, all right? So let me tell you about three important things that I think we need to keep in mind when we start to take a little closer look at Finland, why and what has happened there. The first one is that we have not always had a good education system. And you know, there are those people who say that maybe Finland, as a small, homogeneous, northern Nordic country, where there's always dark and cold and ice, maybe they have always been good in education and there's nothing special there. Okay? So in my book that I wrote, The Finnish Lessons, this is not about learning Finnish. This is about the story of Finland and its education system. I collected all the data and figures that I found to show you, if you want to read the book, that Finland was about 40 years ago performing below the world international average. And by performance, I mean many other things than just how much students were learning, like enrollment and graduation, how many people completed education, how evenly the school system was serving different types of pupils, how much money was spent, and so on. All right. So 40 years ago, Finland was somewhere behind the rest of the world. We were definitely running behind the United States and Canada, Sweden, England, many other countries. Okay, and something like this has happened, that we have been traveling through the course of the four decades, and when the first international study by the OECD called PISA, sometimes people introduce me as a PISA Salberry, because I'm talking about these things. Somewhere around 2000, the first study showed that Finland has been passing almost practically everybody else in terms of how well 15-year-olds know math, science, and reading. Okay? So only if this is true, then we can ask the important question that what did Finns do? What might be behind this this continuous good progress of education that we have been experiencing? Many people agree that the global, the international performance of education school systems is nowhere near where it should be, given all the money and promises and policies and reforms that people have been implementing around the world. Okay? So I don't know how things are here in the United States. If you put your map there, how would you draw the line of American school system? Some people say that it's been declining. Some people say that it's a plateau. Some people say that the progress has been very mild or modest. Whatever it is, Finland has been doing something like this. And now we can ask that why this has happened. And the second one is that we have never wanted to be number one. And this may sound strange to American people, because your way of setting goals is very different to what we have done in Finland. But we never wanted to be better than anybody else, except probably Sweden. Are there any Swedish people here? Oh, they just left. You know, when I was working in the Ministry of Education in mid-1990s, I joined our Minister of Education to an official visit to Swedish Ministry of Education in Stockholm. And we heard how the Swedish minister was telling us their strategy how to become the best education system, a school system, by the first PISA study will be launched in 2000. So it was a long presentation, very detailed, and then when our minister was replying to this presentation by Swedish minister, she said exactly this, that thank you very much for this. It's very interesting, and I wish you all the best, that you will be successful in your plan. But I can only tell you that in Finland, our goal in reforming our education system is much more modest than yours. Because you see, in Finland, for us, it's enough to be ahead of Sweden. And this is exactly what happened a few years later. If you ask the question that how Finnish education reforms and policies have looked like, one of the significant things that you easily see is that from early 1970s, 40 years now, we have basically had the same education policy or same type of goal for our education system. And it looks something like this, that we want to have a school system that is serving all the children well, that everybody has a good school near them. Okay, that time, 40 years ago, when this policy was presented, many people say that this will never be possible, that we don't know how to do this, and many people believe that there are always children who cannot learn, that they're simply individuals who were not created to be educated. Okay, in many ways, this Finnish dream, that I call it a Finnish dream, that everybody will have a good school, is like your President Kennedy's dream in early 1960s, right? Remember when he said that, I want to send a man to the moon and back safely by the end of the decade. You remember that? The Finnish dream is exactly the same, and the reaction was exactly the same. Remember how the scientist replied to the president saying that this is very interesting, but unfortunately we can't do this. We don't have resources, we don't have technology or science. Nobody has ever been on the moon. And we had exactly the same reaction, more or less the same time in 1960s, that how can we do this? Okay, but if you have a dream that is inspiring people to work, just like in this country when the American spaceship was sent to the moon in July 1969, you accomplished the dream. The dream was fulfilled. And in Finland, the same thing happened in 2000. First OECD PISA study. So you need to have a dream that inspires people. And this was really inspiring Finns to work. Everybody, communities, teachers, politicians, everybody, we were working towards the same idea. And it has remained the same all the way until now. All right? Then the third one, and this is something that many people don't either know or they don't want to think about, that Finland has been performing fairly well in many other areas as well. There are many people who say that Finland is only good in education. We used to be good in Nokia, but not anymore. We might be good with Nokia again, I hope so, but it doesn't look good. But we are doing very well in many areas that are compared nowadays. I'll show you some examples here so that you can take a look and see yourself how Finland is doing compared to the United States, all right? So many of these things are fairly significant, like economy, for example, innovation, good governance, equity, inequality, gender issues, child well-being, prosperity. All these things are very important, kind of a high-stake rankings that we can read in our newspapers. And Finland seems to be doing very well in all of these, all right? Let's take the technology. Do you know, how many of you know Angry Birds? Raise your hand if you know Angry Birds, all right? Everybody, okay? Did you know that Angry Birds is from Finland? Okay, it's a Finnish innovation. Okay, so now when you go home from here this evening, you go back home and say that I learned that Finland has Angry Birds. Yeah? And then if you take a look at this United Nations Happiness Index over there, it says that the Finns are the happiest people in the world. And we have Christina here, our honorary consul, and you have a wonderful register plate that says that happiness is being Finnish. Not finished, but being Finnish, yeah? So when you go from home from here, you can say that Finland has angry birds and happy people, right? Because there are many, many countries in the world where they have happy birds but angry people, and many people are angry because of the education, yeah? Another thing that you probably remember a couple of years ago, one of the biggest weekly magazines, Newsweek, was having a cover story saying that the best country in the world is?
Finland.
Say it again. The best country in the world is?
Finland.
That's right. And it was Finland. And everybody else seemed to believe this except the Finns. Because there were two phone calls on the morning when this issue was published to the Newsweek headquarters asking for a recount, saying that you have made a mistake because the best country in the world is not Finland, it's Switzerland. Yeah? And these both phone calls came from Helsinki, our newspapers. The next day, Helsinki Sanomat, which is the biggest newspaper in Finland, published the editorial saying that everybody thinks that Finland is the best country in the world except the Finns. Yeah? So, you know, these are the things, and I'll give you one more that is in one of your big newspapers saying that the sad joke of these days is if you want to live the American dream, move to Finland. It's not my idea, ladies and gentlemen. This is something that your newspaper is writing, yeah? So there has been a lot of this type of hype about Finland and stories, telling about this successful country. And, you know, given all these things, it's no wonder, I think, that our education system is performing well, because it's just part of the overall well-performing Finland, right? So if it was only education where we are doing well, that would be worth a kind of a question. But I think that it's a system that makes things work, and that's why there are many people here in America who say that we are not able to fix our education system here in America unless we fix the system, just like Finland and many other countries have done. That it will be very difficult to just improve one area of your life without doing anything to the others. And that's why I think this is a good lesson from Finland.
Pasi Sahlberg, a professor at the University of Helsinki and the author of Finnish Lessons, What Can the World Learn from the Educational Change in Finland? He spoke at the University of Washington on November 14th, 2012. Sahlberg's lecture was organized by the Finnish Studies Program in the University of Washington's Department of Scandinavian Studies. You can learn more and hear the whole hour of his talk by going to kuow.org/programs/speakers-forum. Anne Dornfeld recorded this talk. I'm Rachel Solomon, KUOW 94.9, Seattle.
More from Pasi Sahlberg in a moment, 8:30, 94.9 KUOW. Neil Donald Walsh, Oregon-based author of the best-selling series Conversations with God, offers recommendations for repairing our electoral system, recommendations that include politicians who tell the truth and who are willing to lose. Listen for that this evening at 10:30. Virologists across the world end their moratorium on avian flu research. We'll hear about that later this evening. Also, the state of Mississippi's only abortion clinic may be shut down because it doesn't comply with a new law. Snowmobilers are inadvertently creating easy paths for predators to get to mountain caribou. And a servicewoman celebrates as the Pentagon lifts the ban on female soldiers in combat roles. All of these items tonight at 11. Lows near 40 tonight for the Seattle area, says the forecast. Rain at times. Friday highs mid to upper 40s. Rain likely. Looking ahead to Friday night, lows around 40. Mostly cloudy with a chance of showers in the evening. Showers likely after midnight. Saturday highs somewhere in the 40s. Rain likely in the morning. Rain at times in the afternoon.
From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Rachel Solomon. Which country has the best education system in the world? Finland consistently ranks at the top, but why? University of Helsinki professor Pasi Sahlberg has some ideas, and he also has some educational lessons to pass on to our own country. Sahlberg spoke at the University of Washington's Kane Hall on November 14, 2012.
So now the question is this good success in education in Finland because we have had same or similar policies than you have in reforming education systems, that we have been trying to do the same things, but we, because it's always cold and ice and snow, and we are small and rather homogeneous up there in north, that we just have been more successful in the implementation? Or is it maybe that we have had very different policies and different way of implementation of our education reforms and policies? It's a very important question, because we have to answer this question before we start to look for any reasons. Any ideas how this would be? What do you think? The first or second?
Second?
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly the case. That is. This is a story about the country with the very different types of policies and very different way of implementing. And this is the kind of a first notion of the story of Finland, that we have not been following what everybody else has been doing. Are you still all right? Are you ready to go? Go out? Not yet. I have still something to tell you. All right? So let me tell you a little bit about the thing that I have done with my book and also with my colleagues to try to understand what's really happening around the world in education reform. I call this the idea that I have in my book and in my work a global educational reform movement. And it's an interesting idea because if you take the first letters of these three words, you get the word germ. Yeah? And germ is it's like a virus, yeah? Something that infects you and makes you feel bad and sometimes makes you really ill. And I think that we have the same type of thing in our global educational reform thinking, that there are viruses that are moving around the world and infecting schools and school systems. Some of them come so ill that children don't learn anymore or teachers don't want to teach anymore and they leave. Okay? So I want to show you how Finland has been doing things in a very different way than many other countries that have been infected by the germ. Okay? And remember, this germ is not a theory. When I went to teacher education as a young student, I was a young idealistic Finn. So I had two theories how to educate children, but I didn't have any kids. Now I have two sons, but no theories anymore. And you know, this is how it works sometimes. And I give you four or five examples of what this germ or global educational reform movement could look like. I'm not going to go into the details because these are kind of clear things if you think about what they could be. The main issue here is to understand how Finland has been responding to some of these main ideas of educational improvement around the world. The first thing that many countries are trying to do at these times and before as well, is to treat education as business. By thinking that if we insist competition, that the schools and teachers and principals are competing against one another, quality will improve and cost will go down. Just like in a business, if you have, for example, a mobile phone network provider, if you have one provider, the price is high and quality is low, right? If you have several of them, the price will go down and quality will go up. Many people think that we can do the same thing with education by creating a kind of an environment where competition is the kind of a main idea of driving the improvement. So what Finland has been doing is a very different thing. We have tried to have education policies that will be try to keep the competition away and emphasize collaboration or cooperation, networking, sharing of things, rather than have competition. It's a very different culture, if you think about it, how the schools will experience competition or collaboration. The other one is the test-based accountability idea, holding teachers and schools accountable for students' learning using standardized tests. And in this country, you know this much better than probably anybody else in the planet, because the United States is one of the most tested school systems in the world. Yeah, and the idea that you hold teachers accountable is interesting because it's somehow related to the idea of responsibility. Let's see what Finns are doing. Rather than having standardized test-based accountability, we are trying to enhance trust-based responsibility in our school system. And this means that we trust our teachers and we try to enhance the responsibility also at the level of students so that they would be responsible for their own learning. There was a delegation of Americans in Finland a couple of months ago, and I learned this from one of the teachers there who said that she saw several classrooms in Finland during the visit and that she was amazed how systematically these teachers were requiring, insisting that the students or pupils have to take responsibility for their own learning. And you know, if you have a stronger accountability, then you will not have responsibility at this level in the school. To me, the Finnish definition for accountability is that accountability is something that is left when responsibility is taken away. Yeah? Don't you agree? Yeah. Okay. Standardization is the next one. There are school systems around the world that are relying more and more on standardization. Common core standards in this country is one example of this. But there are many other countries that are standardizing teaching and learning and all sorts of procedures in the school, hoping that when we are trying to aim towards the same goal, things will get better and the quality will improve. In Finland, we have tried to, again, emphasize personalization of learning instead. This means that we are customizing teaching and learning. We are actually customizing the schools as well, because all the schools in Finland are in the business of designing and planning their own curriculum. Okay? All the high school system in Finland is based on personalized learning, where all the students have their own personal learning plan. And that's why this is a very different way of organizing thinking about teaching. Many teachers in Finland say that the worst enemy of creativity is standardization. The more you standardize, less space there is for creativity. Then the fourth one is a fear. And I don't know how you have experienced this thing, but when I move around in different countries and go to schools and classrooms, what I see more and more is that pupils are afraid, teachers are afraid, principals are afraid, and parents are afraid of failure. And this is, of course, because of the stronger pressure through standardized tests and many other expectations that are going to the schools, that schools are becoming places of fear, not safe places of security where things could be taking place. And in Finland, well-being has been one of the driving ideas in building our school system, that everybody has to feel safe and well before we can expect that they are learning. So if you look at these things, there should be probably one more. No, there's something missing here. But if you look at these things, the standardized testing here on this side of the column is something that is a kind of a driving idea of all of these things. And that's why I think that the over-reliance of standardized testing in many countries is preventing pupils and children from learning things. And teacher professionalism is something that is more typical to Finland. These are two very different things, right? Different ideas. I should probably have one more thing here. Let's see. Yeah. Choice, parental choice is one example, and equity in the Finnish way side is something different. I'll speak about equity in a second. But do you see how different these two ways, the global educational reform movement and the Finnish way, are? And this is where we are really going, not only different directions, but probably into opposite ways. So another question is that how does germ look like? Okay, one of my favorite cartoons, I'll show it to you here, is something like this. You know, this is a Finnish classroom that you see here. Our children and pupils are very different. And there's a teacher who is saying that for a fair selection, everybody has to take the same exam, climb the tree. Yeah? And when teacher is saying this, this teacher here knows already then that some of these kids will fail. They are not going to be successful with this. And all of our classrooms look like this, and many of your classrooms are exactly like this, that they are different individuals, and when we standardize, we are actually creating more and more failure in our school systems. So the second question is that what has been the impact of germ? What do we know about whether this has been working anywhere in the world? And I'll show you some statistics from the OECD database. This is a picture that you can see if you look at the OECD PISA study data from the, for example, the OECD database. You can see here, this is the mathematics national performance of the 15-year-old kids in different countries. Your country is here, England, Canada, Australia, Japan, New Zealand, and Ireland in 2000, 2003, and 2006. Okay? And now, why do I have these countries here? Because all of these countries, one way or the other, they have been infected by germ in 1990s, in their education policies by 1990s, either having a lot of standardized testing, competition, standardization, school choice, accountability, or all of these things. All right? And if you look at the performance, what can you see? They're all going downhill, right? Every one of them. Okay? So there has not been improvement in mathematics. I can change here literacy or science, and it's exactly the same pattern. Okay? And here's little Finland, okay? So you see that Finland started in 2000 already fairly high, 2003 and 2006 continuous improvement, just like you saw earlier, okay? So what does this picture prove? Nothing much, but it's an interesting question, you know? Sometimes I meet with the ministers or colleagues in other countries and I just ask them to explain this to me, okay? Tell me how do you explain this thing that the declining performance in these countries is consistent? Yeah, it's not going all over the place. It's a consistent decline in educational performance. All right.
Pasi Sahlberg, a professor at the University of Helsinki and the author of Finnish Lessons: What Can the World Learn from the Educational Change in Finland? He spoke at the University of Washington on November 14th, 2012. Sahlberg's lecture was organized by the Finnish Studies Program in the University of Washington's Department of Scandinavian Studies. You can learn more and hear the whole hour of his talk by going to kuow.org/programs/speakers-forum. Anne Dornfeld recorded this talk. I'm Rachel Solomon, KUOW 94.9, Seattle.
More from Pasi Sahlberg in a moment. 845, 94.9 KUOW, a conversation about yesterday's congressional testimony by Secretary of State Clinton about Benghazi, Libya, and understanding security risks in North and West Africa. That'll be tonight at midnight. Forecast for the Seattle area for tonight: lows near 40, rain at times. Friday, highs mid to upper 40s, rain likely. Friday night, lows around 40, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers in the evening, showers likely after midnight. Saturday, highs somewhere in the 40s, rain likely in the morning, rain at times in the afternoon. Seattle-based writer and spoken word artist Karen Finifrock reads her poem The Man on Television, which draws parallels between her loss of her sister to heart failure and a bereaved man she saw on TV. Also, all-time best-selling saxophonist Kenny G talks about his life and work with several shows at Jazz Alley this weekend, starting tonight, in fact, I do believe. And then a conversation about the Seattle Department of Transportation's Bicycle Master Plan, which backers say could make Seattle one of the best bike cities in the world, and critics say it's just too expensive. All of those items next hour, beginning right after the 9 o'clock news.
From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Rachel Solomon. Pasi Sahlberg is a professor at the University of Helsinki and the Director General at the Finnish Ministry of Education. He's also the author of the book Finnish Lessons: What Can the World Learn from the Educational Change in Finland? He spoke at the University of Washington's Kane Hall on November 14, 2012.
So we also have, as you heard, we have less homework. It doesn't mean that we wouldn't have homework at all, but we are putting much less emphasis on homework because we think that the children's job is play, that they need to have time to play and develop their minds and imagination so that they can use their brains and minds for something new. There's a theory from Swedish researcher called Anders Ericsson that Malcolm Gladwell has then adopted in his book Outliers that speaks about 10,000-hour rule. And if you apply this rule that says that if you want to be good in anything, you have to practice that something at least 10,000 hours. If you apply this to children's play and say that children have to play at least 10,000 hours if they want to be good in play, it means that they have to play for at least 10 years. Yeah? And if we send our children to school when they're five, they will not have time to practice the play for 10,000 hours. And that's why in Finland we try to keep our children away from institutions like school as long as possible, because we think that the play is more important than early learning. Yeah? Okay, and then the last one, the third, and now I'm coming to the end. This is about my niece, my sister's daughter, Vera, and this is a story about the teacher and leader professionalism that is a third kind of a policy priority here. Let me tell you a little story about her. Because this is a very common thing in Finland. When Vera was in this picture, she's 25 years old, and when she was 19, she was leaving high school, and she was a very good student. Here in America, you would say that somebody is a straight A student, right? That means that she had the highest marks on everything in high school, and also the school leaving examination. That is a very high stake examination in Finland, and normally those students will go to medicine or law or business or something like this in many other countries. But she called me and said that, "Uncle, I have decided to become a primary school teacher and I would like to have your opinion. What should I do?" And to be a primary school teacher in Finland requires that you study in a master's degree program in one of our research universities for at least 5 years. Normally it's a 6-year program. And then you graduate with a master's degree and then you look for a job. And I told her that there's nothing to worry about because you are very bright, you're good in school, you have done your math and science and foreign languages and sports and music and all these things. You know, all the teachers in Finland before you are accepted into teacher training program has to be able to sing. Yeah, you have to be able to sing. This is a kind of a minimum requirement of becoming a teacher, that you are a singer. Okay? So she went to take the exam, and 3 months later she called me and she was desperately crying and saying that, "Uncle, they didn't take me." And I said, "So tell me what happened." And she said that the first part of the examination was very easy because we had to read a book, answer the multiple choice questions, and I'm very good in reading and I remember things and understand, so it was an easy thing for me. And then she was invited to the second phase of the application. Second phase is where they ask a small group of applicants to work together. They give them a task. They have to design an activity for children, and then they have to run this activity in front of the panel. And she said, this was also very easy to me because I have been doing these things with children and I know how to do these things. So she was accepted to the third phase of the entrance examination, which is the private individual interview. So I said, Vera, tell me, what was the most difficult question that they asked you there? Because I knew that the problem was with the interview. And she said that the question I didn't expect from the panel was when somebody said that, why did you come here? And she said that, what do you mean by this? And the panelists said that, you know, Vera, with your grades and with your diploma, you could easily get into law school or medicine or business or anything you want, but why you are here? And I said that, so what did you say? And she said that, well, I said that my uncle is a teacher. And my mother and grandfather and many people in our family, they're teachers. And I think that teaching is like a family business, you know. And then one of them said that, is there anything, Vera, that you would like to add? And she said that, yes, I love children. And that was the wrong answer. So this was why she was rejected. And the reason was that she was not able to explain what was her moral, ethical commitment to teach. Yeah? So the right answer would have been to explain how you feel about teaching. What do you want to achieve with children? Why do you do that? But she was not able to do this. So she asked me that, so what should I do? And I said, go and work as a teaching assistant for a year. So work with the teachers and children in the school and think about these things. And then apply again if you think that teaching is your thing, which she did, and she passed. And now she's actually graduating next week, Saturday. Mm. Yeah? And she will be a primary school teacher, and her letter is here in this book. I asked her to write me a letter to explain this thing. Tell me, why do you want to teach? And I had to publish it here because it's a kind of a heartbreaking story from a young woman who could have done anything, but she wanted to become a teacher. Okay? And if you think that I'm just trying to make you emotional with this, there were many people, and there are many people every year in Finland exactly like her. This is what happened in our university. We had 2,000 applicants in my university alone in Helsinki. We have about 7,500 applications last spring to all of our 8 universities. And in Finland, we took 700. In my university in Helsinki, we took 120. Through exactly the same type of selection procedure, everybody will be interviewed. They have to show what they can do. And they're all bright, talented young people. Okay? So none of these 120 that we have in our program that will last for 5 or 6 years, all of them, they have to have a moral commitment to teach. They have to understand what it is to be a teacher. There's nobody there who would say that, I don't know really what I want to do, but I thought that teaching is a kind of a good thing to do. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? There are many people around the world who go to teacher training saying exactly this, that I'm not really a teacher, but I think I do this. And then I think about what I really want to do, okay? And you know what is the difference here is that when you have people like Vera who will go to school and stay there for a long time, we will have more teachers than probably anybody else in the world who will pass this 10,000-hour practice line. 10,000 hours teaching means about 8 years, 8 to 10 years of practice. Who will stay there for a long time and then they will become good. In the United States, I was told that about half of your teachers will leave the school and their job before the end of the 5th year. So you will never have this community of teachers in your schools who have enough practice to be really good teachers, all right? And personally, I don't believe in these programs where you have the fast-tracked preparation of teachers like Teach for America, Teach First, or Teach for Canada. And you know why I think that there's a problem there. In Finland, I was talking about this thing with my colleagues and somebody, one of the teachers said that, you know, as soon as we allow medical doctors or engineers or dentists to touch my teeth after 5 weeks summer course, that will be fine. And think about this question, that you go to a dental clinic, you have an awful toothache, and what you see there is a young person from the Yale University, a lawyer, saying that, you know, I'm really enthusiastic about drilling your teeth, and I just completed a wonderful 5-week summer course. Please have a seat. And then you say that, so what is this program called? And he says that it's called Drill for America. You would probably do exactly what I do, is to say, no, thank you. I want to go to somebody who has at least 10,000 hours of practice before you can touch my teeth, right? So why should we allow anybody to touch our children with a similar thing? I don't understand, all right? So now, when I look around the world, what do I see? And this is going to be the end of my thing here tonight. I see that people are trying to do the wrong thing a little bit righter. Yeah, a wrong thing a little bit righter. And this is what Sir Winston Churchill said a long time ago, which is so telling for education reforms everywhere. He said that you can always count on Americans to do the right thing after they have tried everything else. And you know, unfortunately, I think that this is what is about to be happening, that one day you're going to get it because you are the only country in the world who has everything, anything, that all it takes to fix the school system, but you have to try all these things like Drill for America and all these things before you get there, all right? But remember Finland, that we have been able to find the easier way. And let me finish by showing you this picture, because this is our son Otto, okay? And in this picture, Otto is, he's about 2 months old. Isn't he nice? Yeah. Now Otto is about 6-7 months next week. A little boy, okay? And now I can see some people say, pointing at me and say, what the heck you are doing here? You should be somewhere else. But you know, when I left here about 12 days ago, I went to my son, and I look at his blue eyes, and he looked at me and said that, Daddy, why do you have to go? Stay home. And you know, in Finland, children develop so quickly that already when they're 6 months, they talk fluently. Maybe this is a sign that Finnish language is so easy to learn that he can speak when you're 6 months. But you know, he looked at me and said, Daddy, stay home with me and mother. Why do you need to go? So what do you say to a 7-month-old, your own son, in a situation like this? You know, I look at him and say that, you know, Otto, when you were born in April 17th this year, there were 350,000 children, your brothers and sisters, who were born on that same day somewhere around the world. And 350,000 children, boys and girls, the following day. And 350,000 children the day after. And I have to go because I want that you and your brothers and sisters in the world will have a good public school that I had and your mother had. Because I feel that if I don't go, you will not have this. That I want to go and help people to save their schools. Thank you.
Pasi Sahlberg, a professor at the University of Helsinki and the author of Finnish Lessons, What Can the World Learn from the Educational Change in Finland? He spoke at the University of Washington on November 14, 2012. Sahlberg's lecture was organized by the Finnish Studies Program in the University of Washington's Department of Scandinavian Studies. You can learn more and hear the whole hour of his talk by going to kuow.org/programs/speakers-forum. Anne Dornfeld recorded this talk. I'm Rachel Solomon, KUOW 94.9, Seattle.
Support for KUOW comes from STG, presenting Hubbard Street Dance Chicago, performing two works by Israeli choreographers, February 9th at the Paramount Theater. More information at stgpresents.org, 9 o'clock, KUOW-FM.
Thanks for listening. The program you just heard was made possible by the financial support of our listeners. Support this program and others like it by making a pledge today at kuow.org.